Well, I believe we are officially in the fall season, and temperatures are going to be dropping, if they haven't already, in your area. And when it comes to fishing, that can be good news for anglers. It may come as a surprise to some, but fall is a prime time to fish for salmon. Certainly muskies, my favorite time of the year for muskies, but it's also great for walleyes and a whole lot more. And we're going to talk about that with Gary Engberg. Gary is a professional tournament angler, fishing guide. He's an avid conservationist, sportsman, advocates for getting kids involved in the outdoors. He blogs, and he's got a great blog at GaryEngbergOutdoors.com, and comes by every so often to talk with us about fishing. And Gary, great to have you along today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Larry. It's always a pleasure.
This is a great time of the year, isn't it, for fish?
It's a great time of the year for anyone who loves the outdoors, because there's so many things going on. I mean, it's going to be the best fishing of the year is usually in the fall. You have all your different hunting seasons are open. But even if you're not a fisherman or a hunter, it's a great time to watch birds. We're losing a lot of birds that are starting to migrate, but there's also a lot of birds passing through. So if you're a bird watcher, you know, keep those bird feeders full, and you'll see a lot of birds you probably don't normally see. And Larry, I was listening as you're talking to your last guest, and you should be able to get steel shot about anywhere. And also, too, people should realize that if they're hunting on state land, even if you're hunting mourning doves, you have to be using non-toxic shot. So that can be either steel, bismuth, or any of the other combinations that they make.
But not lead.
Not lead. No lead at all. Lead is bad, bad.
And, again, Nancy in St. Germain, we were talking about sinkers as well. And, Nancy, I want to get you involved here. Thanks for waiting, by the way.
Oh, sure. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, and you had a comment about lead sinkers?
I do. We're up on Sound Lake in St. Germain, and we have loons and eagles. And we've had a campaign up there that the DNR has actually run for a few years called Get the Lead Out. And last year, I collected all of the lead sinkers and all of the fishing tackle that had lead in it. And I took like 2 5-pound coffee cans and took them up to one of the DNR stations. And they will take the lead and they recycle it, and then they offer you an alternative. So you can pick up, I think you said they're made of zinc.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pick up sinkers and also, the ones with the hooks on them.
Yeah.
There. So that's the way to do it.
And so you found these, all those sinkers?
Yeah. Yeah, well, were in my dad's tackle box.
Ah, got it.
Yeah, so I went and I cleaned it all out. And he had a lot of tackle. and I looked it up online, and that's how I found where to take it.
Well, that's good. Thank you so much for calling. And Gary, getting the lead out of our sinker is a good thing, too.
It's a great thing. And, I mean, like, I'm on the Wisconsin River, and so there's a lot of snags. People lose and break line and lose a lot of line. And there is an abundance of lead you'll find all the time. And anytime I happen to find some or get some on a log or a twig when I'm fishing, I just put it in the boat or put it in my pocket and save it and take it and dispose of it. But they're going to be going, and some states already have gone to using different, you know, minerals or different products instead of using lead. Like you said, there's a zinc, there's bismuth, and there's other alternatives. The main problem is that usually they can't make the size. The size is bigger to get the proper weight, you know, of a comparable, you know, product. And that's the main problem. But people should start trying to find an alternative, because there's no doubt that lead really does hurt our bird populations. Any of your migratory, your ducks, your geese, your eagles, you know, your falcons, you know, your ospreys, all of them are, you know, it's very toxic.
And thanks again, Nancy, for calling and for waiting. I appreciate your call very much. You can join in, too, by the way. Maybe you have a fishing question or a great fishing story or experience to share. Join in at 1-800 642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And if you've got, we've got some great eagle and osprey photos on our Facebook page, but if you've got a good fishing picture, we'd love to see that as well. So post that up on our Facebook page. And really, fall, gosh, it is the best time of the year for fishing for so many species, isn't it?
Probably, I think about it. You know, a lot of people like spring, get out there early, you know, after, you know, fish have been in the, you know, the hard water season with, you know, ice fishing and things open up and fish, you know, will start getting a little more active because they become pretty dormant, most fish do during the winter season. But there's nothing like the fall because the fish have been, you know, feeding all winter. They realize the days are getting shorter. There's less hours of daylight. Temperatures are starting finally to cool off, even though we do still have water temperatures in our area, you know, in the mid to high 60s. And for fish really to start going, we got to get down there, you know, into the 50s, and then they really know what's going on. And most fish species, you know, that we have in Wisconsin, and Wisconsin is blessed with having a, you know, a fantastic fishery of most, you know, freshwater species there are. They really put on the feed bag, and now's the time, starting, you know, probably in October is the best time to be catching large fish.
Absolutely. And we're getting to lake turnover time as well, and somebody said, well, what's lake turnover? And I said, well, listen.
Well, I just happened to write down a little paragraph or two here on what turnover is.
Perfect.
So I will explain what turnover is, and this is very important if you're fishing in the fall. And it happens in most of your northern states, and it's an annual occurrence, and it happens usually the first week or two of October. And like I said, it's called turnover, and other parts of the country I'm sure have it, but it's more common up in the north. Most people really don't understand what you're talking about, but it involves the physics of water temperature and how it relates to the weight, or i.e. cold water weighs more than hot water. This is because the hot water molecules of the hot water are further apart than they are in cold water, so closer packed molecules result in more weight. Enough of the physics here, but during the summer months, the surface water is constantly being hit by the warm sun. Therefore, the warm water stays on top. It weighs less. You probably have dived in the water in the summer, and you just get a few feet down, and you see how much, you know, difference there is in the water temperature. And this is normal in the summertime. But when fall arrives, the opposite effect happens. The surface begins giving off heat in the air, and if you fish in the fall, it's not uncommon to see, you know, a fog or a mist coming off the water in the morning. And this is because the air is colder than the water, and like a breath you have on a mirror or on your windshield of your car, the water is literally condensing in the air, causing the mist. And then as more heat is given off to the air, the surface gets colder and heavier. Eventually, the surface water actually gets colder than the water at the bottom of your lake or your river, and this sinks, raising the bottom water to the top. And literally what happens is, turnover is, your whole water column flip-flops, and your colder water comes to the top, your warmer water goes to the bottom. And this transition period is usually very, very bad fishing time. And what if you get to a lake, you can usually tell if a lake is turning over, to Larry, by you'll get kind of an off, you know, type of smell. You'll get a smell, and that's usually from your decaying weeds. And then also there's other things that are going to affect this, and, you know, the amount of sunlight you get every day, the wind, all these things go into effect. But usually turnover starts around 55 to 52 degrees, and if you find a lake that's turning over, turn around and find another lake or go to a smaller lake that hasn't turned, because all lakes don't turn over at the same time.
Yeah, so, and it just they just don't feed.
No, they don't. And the thing is that, you know, your water temperature, like I said, is constant usually throughout your whole lake you're fishing on. And, you know, it's harder to find the fish because they're not concentrated. And once you have turnover, it's a lot easier to catch fish because you're going to be finding them in their, you know, the normal spots when you where you should. And also, too, like people, if they're musky fishermen, musky ciscos, which is one of their main forage base if they have, if they're in the lake you're fishing, that's muskies love them. and they do their spawning in the fall. So if you can find rocks and ciscos and good green weeds, because what happens now, too, about this time of year, a lot of your weeds in your shallow water are dying. So your fish are going to be moving out to your first break line. But then after this cools down and your temperature gets down, fish will move back into shallower water, and they'll concentrate on finding, you know, good areas with rock, hard bottoms, and also the most important thing, if you find it, it's a fish magnet, are good green weeds.
Yeah, that's going to really do well. You mentioned muskie again, and I know you posted a nice article, 5 Spots for Good Fall Fishing, that I thought was really good. And one of the areas you mentioned is Trout Lake.
Oh, you might know that one.
And I often thought with the cisco in that water,
which they do have, yes, Trout Lake is full. And Trout Lake, if people don't know it, is just south of Boulder Junction in Vilas County.
And it's a deep, deep lake. And I often thought, if we were ever going to get another world record muskie out of Wisconsin, it might come out of Trout Lake.
Well, I'll tell you, the one of the great place right now, and it's not so much of a secret anymore, and, you know, I've traveled the whole country fishing when I was fishing tournaments steady and guiding and just fishing for pleasure, is I always used to go to Lake Erie for walleye, because Lake Erie was like, you know, there was no fishing like it. It was like the lake of dreams, because if you ever caught a big fish, it would be there. But now the Bay of Green Bay is turning out fantastic walleyes and huge muskies. I talk to some guys up there regularly, and they're catching 50-inch muskies, Larry, are no longer, you know, a thing of the, you know, a rarity. They're common. They're catching 55, 57-inch fish in the Bay of Green Bay. There's a great forage base there. The walleye fishing is very, very good. There's a lot of 10, 12, 13-pound walleyes. 40-pound muskies are relatively common. And, you know, Brent Alexander is a good guide up there if someone was looking for someone. Or get a hold of me, and I can set you up with it. But you don't have to drive out to Lake Erie. You don't have to go to Canada. I mean, Green Bay is not too bad of a drive.
No, you're absolutely right about that, and maybe that's where we're going to get a world record.
You could, and I really believe that. I believe that there's. I know that I had friends who just got back from Andy Meyer's Lodge up on Eagle Lake in Canada, and that's a tremendous fishery, but they didn't catch any fish bigger than around here, and they hadn't so far this year. And, you know, the St. Lawrence Seaway is another real good place where they get, you know, some big muskies. I had a friend release probably a world record fish 2 years ago. You know, that was, if you take the measurements where you take the girth and the length and everything, and his fish would have been, you know, in the high 60s.
Wow. Gary Engberg, our guest, he'll be with us till 12:30 today. News next, then we'll be back with Gary. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at fall fishing opportunities today with our guest, Gary Engberg. Gary has been on the show many, many times, professional tournament angler, fishing guide, avid conservationist. He works a lot for getting children involved in the outdoors. And he's got a great blog. Go to his blog at GaryEngbergOutdoors.com. And we have a link on our Facebook page. So if you we link with all of his sites. So go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can find those links and take a look.
Larry, as long as we're talking quick about muskies, I was with last week the DNR on Lake Monona in cooperation with the Madison chapter of Muskies, Inc., released the Thompson strain of muskies in the Lake Monona, Lake Wabisa, and Lake Wingra. I think they put in 2,000 in the Monona, 1,000 in the Wabisa, and about 100 in the Wingra. Now, these are the Thompson strain muskies. They're trying to find out over a period of time. This is the 6th or 7th year, they're comparing the Leech Lake strain of muskie, which is from Minnesota, to the Thompson strain from Wisconsin, to see which is more economical to raise. But you don't have to go far. I mean, there's 50-inch muskies being caught right on your lake that you live on.
Yeah.
And they're not so unusual anymore, and I know of probably 6 or 7 caught this year. And, you know, a 50-inch muskie, people would give their left arm for that right now. But, you know, there's great fishing here in the, you know, the various, like, Muskies Inc. and the local chapter. And, you know, that's, like, in cooperation with the DNR, have done a fantastic job. And people have to realize that our DNR here does a great job. You compare it with some other states, there's no comparison. You know, like, if you go to Indiana, you have to get there at 2 or 3 in the morning to wait in line to see if you can get a duck blind on state land to hunt. So it's, you know, what we have here is fantastic. Plus, we have a multitude of about any type of species of fish there is, and people should just take advantage of it. And another thing is that I don't know if you've ever had Scott Stewart on the show, but he's with one of the fisheries head who just recently retired. He's very much responsible for the great growth of muskies in the state, and he's done a fantastic job. And I just would like to say congratulations, Scott.
Yeah, he's done fantastic fantastic work. John and Nina has a question I think that relates to muskies, so let's go there. John, hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hey, thanks, guys. General question about fishing the bay for muskies, if there's any hazards to watch out for, or if you can point me to a bait shop or someone who can give advice on some general spots to try. And then a follow-up on that is, anybody have any knowledge, advice of muskies in the Bago system? Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
In the Winnebago system?
Yeah.
I don't know how prevalent muskies are in the Winnebago system, but they're, you know, Green Bay system, a person to contact, Brent Alexander, he's a fantastic fishing guide. I would contact him. Most of your bait shops, you know, right in the area, you know, because some of your boat landings are right downtown by Lambeau Field, you know, check out any of those. If you go on the internet and just look, you can find all the information you want. Another good source for finding local information would be Lake Link. LakeLink.com. Go to their website, and you can look at about any body of water there is and find some good information.
And Brent Alexander is a good guide and could be quite helpful. I mean, somebody to go with, too.
Yeah, plus, I mean, he does very well. I get pictures regularly from him, and whether it's walleyes or muskies. And the thing is, you know, I'm kind of old school, Larry. I was brought up fishing muskies in northern Wisconsin, yeah. And then it was all casting.
Yep.
You know, we were throwing big plugs. But now with so many bodies of water, you're allowed to troll, which gives you, you know, you can put out more baits. You're allowed three lines in Wisconsin. You know, people are even using planer boards for muskies, so you can cover a wide, wide area. And being able to troll, it's not like you got to keep making casts and casts and casts. I don't enjoy it quite as much as, you know, casting, but they do catch a lot of fish, and you can troll on the Madison Lakes.
Yeah, there you go. Mike and Slinger, thanks for calling. Hello.
Yes, I forget what chain of lakes it's on where you can't catch a walleye anymore. It's there are no walleyes whatsoever. I mean,
the Tomahawk chain right out of Minocqua, and that's no walleyes for 5 years.
And I heard that part of the reason is because of the catch and release of the muskies. And there's so many predators, so many muskies that feed on the walleye. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I heard.
Well, I mean, muskies are out there. They're the top apex of your food chain, and you know, they'll eat about everything. But, you know, another thing, I mean, walleyes, even big walleyes, eat a lot of little walleyes. Lake Mille Lacs, which is probably has been one of the premier walleye lakes in Minnesota and in the whole country, you can go down to one fish there, and some places only no fish, and it's really hurt the economy, hurt guides, hurts the bait shops. And the problem they have there is there's a lot of big fish, but they're getting very little reproduction or smaller fish. So there's not much coming up to fill those gaps. So when that starts happening, you know, it's a lot of, you know, it's a big question for what fishery managers have to do. And even though some places are booming as far as the walleye population, there's other great places where it's taking a downturn.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Dave in Augusta, thank you for calling. Hi, Dave.
Good afternoon, Larry, and your guest. I got to tell you a quick little story. I know you're looking for stories. So this is, and Larry, you know I make musky lures on the side.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That aside, the first musky lure I ever made was out of a chair leg, off of a wooden chair. I took the bottom 7 inches of one of the legs and I cut it off, and I put a spreader, I put a set of spreader hooks on it. I put a screw eye in the front, a screw eye in the back. It had three hooks, and on the front of the lure, I made a homemade propeller out of stainless steel. It was about 4.5 inches long, side to side. So what I did was, I didn't even test it. I took it up my favorite spot, Chippewa Flowage, a place called Turkey Bar. My very first cast I made with that a few weeks later after I made it, I wasn't expecting. I just wanted to see how it would operate. And Larry, right behind the lure all the way to the boat, was a muskie, probably one of the biggest ones I've seen in that flowage. And it had his mouth open, and he was gapping at it, and I got frozen. I couldn't do nothing. And I swung it around sideways. He took a swipe at it. It disappeared. But that was the only time I've ever taken that lure fishing. I've got it hanging in my fishing room.
It sounds like buck fever when people see a big buck and they can't pull the trigger.
That's exactly what it was. But he lived on to be caught another day. So that's my story.
Oh, that's a great story. And I'll tell you, Dave makes some really nice lures. And I have one. And I wouldn't take it. I wouldn't use it because it's just too nice, to be perfectly honest.
Another lure manufacturer, a good friend of mine and guide, is Russ Smith out of Minocqua. And Russ makes everything he makes with his sons is handmade, still made out of wood. They turn everything on their own lathes and hand paint it. And it's not like made out of plastic like a lot of lures are now. And, you know, they're limited on what their production is, but Smith makes a fantastic bait. He also makes it at Christmas time, and every year he only makes 100 of these baits numbered and signed, and it's about a 20-inch long jointed musky lure. Every year is a different color, and if you know who Terry Dowdy, who does a lot of great wildlife art, is, Russ's lures are in a lot of his musky photos.
Yeah.
Or his paintings.
A lot of his paintings, yeah. I've got some of his, prints of some of his work, so. Oh, man. Norm in Oneida County has a comment, so our question. Hi, Norm.
Yeah, good luck. I have a question. How he feels about the catch and release regarding muskies?
I believe, for sure, I believe in catch and release. I believe in catch and release on most species of fish, especially even on walleyes, if they get to be, you know, if you're getting, you know, prime spawning fish in that, in walleyes, you know, probably 22 to 26 inch fish. Muskies, they can make such wonderful reproductions now, and if you can take a photo or, they have, you know, so many different models you can look at. You can get a fish that look exactly like the one you caught. And I don't think muskie's real good table fare. I've never eaten it myself, but I remember and my grandfather did in, you know, probably 30, 40 years ago. But I believe in, you know, catch and release or catch, photograph, and release.
Yeah, catch, photograph, and release is a kind of a nice way to do it, or just catch and release. I would agree with you.
You know, and trying what you want to do, too, when you're handling muskies, be very careful. Make sure your hands are wet, because if your hands are wet, you touch a fish, you're going to leave your imprint on that fish. You don't want to take off that protective slime that's on them. And I would always try and, you know, after you've netted that fish, keep it in the net and keep it in the water and try and, you know, try and get it out of the water or handle it as little as possible.
There we go. We had a comment from Michelle on Facebook, who, and this is, goes back to our earlier question about fishing muskies on Green Bay and where to go and who to talk to. And Michelle says their favorite independent bait shop, there's several of them, but Smokey's on the Bay is one that they really like. And you
Smokey's
get some,
has a fantastic supply of anything you could possibly need.
Yeah, it's a great place to go if you want some more information as well. John in Bayfield County, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. Larry, I just wanted to comment on your guest's description of lake turnover. He did a very nice job. I'm a physics teacher, and I could just add a footnote to that.
Okay.
Which is that what we're really talking about here is the density of water. Yep. And in common terms, that would be how many pounds per cubic feet, or some such measure. And what happens with water, its unique substance, is that it has its maximum density. That is, a cubic foot of it would weigh the most at 39 degrees Fahrenheit or 4 degrees Celsius. So when the water at the surface reaches that temperature in the fall, it sinks to the bottom. Okay?
Yep. Yep.
And it keeps sinking to the bottom. And the water above that then remains whatever it is until it catches up and the whole lake then becomes that temperature. Then the surface water will cool till ice will form. And that will happen down at 32 degrees Fahrenheit. So what you've got, thank God, is the ice floating on on heavy water. If that didn't happen, if water did not expand between 39 and 32, it expands again then the lakes would freeze from the bottom up, and we'd be in deep trouble.
There also is, you also have a similar type of turnover, too, that happens, you know, in the spring and summer, too. I mean, the reverse effect.
Yep.
Oh, that's
nice job, though. I appreciate that.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the call. And that was a nice footnote to it as well. I really enjoyed that. Thank you. We have, we had lots of callers. Glenn in Fox Lake, your turn. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. A couple of comments. I have been fishing for 7 or 8 years. My buddy and I, we've been bending the barbs down on our crankbaits. We've hardly ever lose a fish. We don't even bring them in the boat. We just got along with pliers. You just flip them off. And I watch John Gillespie or all these guys on the fishing shows, and they struggle with this pliers trying to get these hooks out. They damage the fish, and most of the fish are letting go anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, some people have to remember, too, if they are going to be musky fishing, make sure that you have, you know, a good glove. You do have good tools, a good pliers, a long needle nose, you know. So, you know, it's, like you said, the amount of handling you do with that fish is minimal.
Yeah. Okay, the other little story, I got a classmate of Russ Smith.
Oh,
and
boy,
in,
that's going back a couple seasons.
Oh, yeah, 1962.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, he took me musky fishing the first time in the middle 70s. We had a big sucker on, and when we got a musky to bite, he said, well, now we got to look at our watch, and we have to count the 20 minutes or 30 minutes. And then we didn't always either hook the fish. So I went home, and I thought, well, why don't I go and put a leader off of that front hook and put a treble hook on it and put that treble hook in the back of the sucker. And I was probably one of the first people to ever make a
quick set rig.
And, you know, I wasn't dumb enough or I wasn't smart enough to go and get that patented.
Yeah, that's another thing of when you're musky fishing. They do make, like, a lot of people do use suckers, and they're very good in the fall, and they're, you know, one of the best. You know, if you're going to be casting, it's always good to have a sucker out there on a big float. But muskies are just, you should, you know, the quick set rig allows you a little bit of handling, so you're not going to gut hook a fish. And that's the main thing we're talking about is the survival of the fish. And they've been around for quite a while now, and I think that's the only way if you're going to use live bait in the fall.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Glenn, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Mike and Madison a chance to join in. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I've been fly fishing for numerous years on the Madison chains, and a lot of the rigs that I use, a lot of the flies that I use, you know, are the bigger streamers and things like that. And I've been catching just a number of pike. And I've been trying to target and try and catch some muskies, especially on Mendota, Monona. And I don't know if I'm just not using the right approach or what I'm doing. I'm just wondering what your callers or your guest's advice is on, you know, trying to target.
I would stay away from them. If you want to catch muskies, I would stay away from Lake Mendota because you have a zillion you know, 25 to 30 inch pike. It's a fantastic pike fishery. You know, you have a minimum size. I mean, the minimum size limit, I think, is 40 inches, which is big. So you have, I mean, you're going to go out there and catch pike no matter what. I would concentrate more on Wabisa and Monona. And those are, you know, your more heavily populated musky lakes. And like I said, that friend of mine, Russ Smith in Minocqua, and you could get a hold of him in the phone book. It's Smith Bait Company. He takes a lot of people out who are specifically targeting muskies on while fly fishing, and they do very, very well. And there's also a gentleman in Eagle River who used to live in Monona called George his name is George Langley. And he's a big fly fisherman for muskies. So look for George Langley in Eagle River. He's got a bait shop there, or Russ Smith in Minocqua.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling, Mike. Appreciate it. Greg in Augusta, your turn. Hi, Greg.
Yes, I'm a 68-year-old muskie fisherman with a memory in the 1950s with my dad carrying a pearl-handled .22 revolver and being able to shoot a muskie that was brought to the side of the boat rather than try to land it with a net or a gaff. Do you know anything about that? When did that stop?
I remember when I was younger, and that's you know, decades ago, when we were up we spent a lot of time in Vilas County with my family. We'd go up there for a month in the summer, and if we were in our cabin or something eating dinner and you heard a gunshot, my grandfather would always say, well, there is another muskie. So it was very common, but it ended up, a lot of people ended up putting holes in their boats, too. And, I don't know when it was made illegal not legal, but it's been quite a while. But that was a very common practice. Everyone would carry a .22 pistol in their boat, and if it got along the side of the net, instead of hassling with landing it, and that's also, too, when people were catching and keeping those fish. You know, they'd shoot them with a .22.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of it, too, was people were starting to shoot when they were quite a ways away from the boat.
Yeah.
And you'd have bullets skipping, and, oh, man.
Plus the deflections you get off a bullet off the water, you have no idea where it's going.
Yeah. There you go, Greg. Thank you. Jeff in Waupaca, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just had a great memory. I grew up in northern Wisconsin in the 70s, going muskie fishing up at Pelican Lake up there, and always going to Muskie Bay. And my first memory is my going fishing with my grandpa. That meant I roll the boat while he sits in the front and just casts out and drove. And I remember sitting there rolling the boat, and all of a sudden I'm looking, and he sees this fish coming up behind his lure, and I'm looking, and it's like, this fish is bigger than the boat, Grandpa. How are we going to get this in the boat? And, I mean, I can see that fish to this day coming along. I mean, I'm in the back of the boat rowing, and he's got that lure, and it's coming up behind that boat, and I'm like, where's the end of this fish? You know, trying to see the end of it as I'm trying to keep my oar out of the way of the boat, and the... Oh, man. But that was my first memories of muskie fishing up on Pelican Lake up with my grandpa. That was always a great time.
I remember when I was a child, and we were fishing up south of, well, it was called Weiniger then, but now it's Presque Isle, and we were on Horsehead or Armour Lake, and my grandfather was an original old road troller, and, you know, we had a follow-up on a muskie, and it was, you know, I was probably 5-6 years old, but my cousin and I were scared to death to go on the boat after that for a while because the muskie was so big. It was bigger than we were.
Oh, man. Oh, that's a great story. And someone called, I wonder if it was Dave from Augusta, called back to say that shooting muskies ended in 1965. So it was 1965 was when you couldn't shoot them anymore. And I'm glad to say that. I mean, you're catch and release muskies now, and I think pretty much everybody does it. Gary, it's been great as always, and we got your blog, and you're doing wonderful.
And there's one other thing, too, I want to mention. Till the end of the month, you got that hook and line sturgeon season is open on selective waters in the state. 60-inch minimum, one fish. But the Wisconsin River has a good population of them below the dams. And there's assorted, like the Flambeau River up north and the Jump River, the Yellow River. There's, you know, a few places, if you look in your regulations book, where that hook and line season's open till the end of September.
Thanks so much, Gary.
Good having you, Larry. Always good to talk to you.
Gary Engberg, professional tournament angler, fishing guide, go to GaryEngbergOutdoors.com, and you can see a whole lot more about what he's up to. He's got a nice story on good spots for fall fishing that we never really got into, and I'm sorry we didn't. But go online, you'll see it. And thanks a lot for listening. Tomorrow at 11, we'll talk about whether remodeling or adding on is right for you, for your home. Again, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.